Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Eric Dishman, director of NIH's Precision Medicine Initiative Cohort Program. So, you know, I get a chance whenever I have somebody in here to talk about the use of collaboration and partnerships to achieve mission results and outcomes. How are you leveraging partnerships to improve operations or to execute your mission?
The good news is even when I came into the role, the sort of the premise of partnership is the only way to succeed was in the water already, and I absolutely believe it. I mean, there's the partnerships within NIH and all of the brilliance of the other institutes, right? But also, as I said before, this is not your traditional NIH grant program. You know, you might have an award come out from NIH and there's 20 awards. Each individual institution won their award. They may or may not talk to each other as colleagues, but they've got to go do their science very deliberative way and give it back. Every award that we've given out says, hey, you need to play with another 30 or 40 partners because everybody's got a piece that you're bringing together. So that's created operational challenges. You know, just how do you do a status report, right? We're still struggling through how we do a status report. My team gets them on Thursdays and Fridays, and we were trying to do them on a weekly basis, and it's like, oh my God, this is hundreds of pages to actually read. You know, how do we crisply go do this? And soon there's other companies that we're bringing on board to help do a lot of that. You know, right now we're in kind of startup mode. But the really interesting partnerships are going to be, and I don't mean to say those aren't interesting, but I mean some of the compelling ones we need for this thing to go and go big are those community partnerships. Getting at the end of the day, all healthcare is local, and the trusted names and brands are the individual clinician and/or the particular clinic or the particular hospital in the town or village. And we know that, and we have to build a network, a national network of those local hubs who can help people understand this pretty complex thing, understand the value proposition for them of why they could and should do it, both as an individual as well as for the good of the country, and then help maintain an interesting relationship. So, I said I'm going to end up going on bus tours or a van tour or an Uber tour around the country, right, where I'm just going to picnics or movie night or all the different things that we'll do so that people have a sense of family and community for those that want to. Again, there'll be those that don't, but there'll be many that want to go to the Pittsburgh barbecue that says, hey, you're in the study too. Oh, great. What are you learning? And that kind of thing. And then the last piece is industry, right? I mean, I'm not going to go build a better social networking tools than industry already has. I'm not going to build. So, partnering with them for APIs and opening up some of their software for our folks to be able to use and services so that I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. That would be a foolish use of government resources.
What is your strategy for explaining, not so much healthcare, but science to lay people? The work that you're doing now, what's your strategy in doing that?
Well, first, I try to do two things anytime I explain it. I mean, I am a social scientist, trained much like you would imagine an anthropologist being. So I have 30 years of field work that I've done myself with the front lines of nurses, physicians, certified nursing assistants, and tons and tons and tons of patients. And then I have my other hat on as a patient advocate who literally has helped more than 1,000 people deal with their cancer experience end to end. So the first thing that I try to do is to explain to people the value proposition of what we're doing, right? I mean, before we get into technology or anything else, it's like, why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. And what's the pain and suffering that researchers are going through now that this will help to solve? What's the pain and suffering that providers are going through now? And what's the pain and suffering that, people with a wide range of health conditions or not even having access to the healthcare system are going through now? And then how can this particular program help to start to address some but not all of those concerns? So make the value proposition clear, and then the fact that we're doing user-centered design makes it very easy to explain this to people because we literally are studying real people to make the choices and decisions that we are, and we show them the results of those studies. We'll soon be releasing what we call our personas. There's 8 personas as we've been studying participants or potential participants across the country that really embody different attitudes towards donating and giving and trust and all of that. So, once you couch it in those terms and then they can, translating the technology becomes easier because they understand what's the technology trying to accomplish.
Uh-huh. So to what extent is your effort, the cohort program, more of a marathon than a sprint?
Oh, it's definitely a marathon. I mean, to be honest with you, coming into the job, I think where a lot of people were like, oh, let's launch and get something up and running really quickly. It's like, we'll do some small things quickly to learn from. But I think the biggest, if we're trying to create a 30 to 50 year trusted relationship with a million or more people and all of their providers as well, and we're trying to build something that thousands, if not tens of thousands, I don't actually know the number, it could be 100,000 researchers are coming to use, then we have to listen to them. We have to include them. And we have to build something that over time adds more and more value as we go. That's not to say that it's going to be years before we launch. You know, we'll launch when we're ready, but I think we're already piloting things. And I think, you know, it's reasonable to expect in late fall or early winter that we'll make some more public, you know, launches of pieces of this. But we're not going to go to entire country coverage out of the gate. That would be foolish, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to do regions and different populations that we're really reaching out to. And here's a concerted effort to get rural people or people in manufacturing environments from this area. And then it won't be long after that we'll open up the 1-800 lines to anybody and all of that. But what I don't want to do is, you know, get people excited about it, say, hey, we're going to be really responsive, and then so many people respond that we can't follow up with a quality. We can't even follow up yet because there's just so many people that are interested. I'm worried about a success catastrophe, right? Tens of millions of people are interested. And how do you actually manage expectations? I said before, success equals results minus expectations. And the other thing for everybody to realize, there's a lot of studies like this that they do a blood draw once or at the beginning, right? This is, you know, it's not that we'll do a blood draw every, you know, 12 to 18 months, but every 12 to 18 months, we'll release another version of the PMI cohort platform. It'll have new things that the participants can use. You know, we'll get better and better at giving them dashboards and tools to understand their own data over time. There'll be new tools that the researchers can use, new data types that we can capture, right? I said out of the gate, we're not going to be collecting smartphone data, for example, but eventually we'll add that capability. And then every single release will add some new areas of science, and we will explain, you know, what do we not understand about heart and lung, and what kinds of data types are we wanting to capture, and what kinds of science will be done on top of that, and what kinds of breakthroughs can we imagine will come from that? Oh, the cognitive decline or an Alzheimer's release, right? What does the power of a million people give us that traditional study mechanisms have not? So this is a marathon, and if you... You know, first impressions when you go date somebody are incredibly important. First impressions when we start this thing off are incredibly important. And that transparency and start small, but show the vision of the promise of where we're going, and inviting and enlisting those people to authentically help you achieve that vision by making the program better as you go, that's the way you succeed. And that's the way that we are proceeding.
Yeah, that's great. So, Eric, what advice would you give someone who might be thinking about a career in public service?
This was a complete shock to my system, and one that I now wish I had done a decade earlier. Okay. I mean, I've done small not-for-profit, large not-for-profit, small for-profit, large for-profit, think tank, and academia. And so I guess for me, while I never had any intention of coming and working in the government, I think I carried in with me stigmas and stereotypes of government workers that are inherent in the jokes that we all tell, but, you know, and even government workers sort of joke about themselves as government workers of, you know, belabored bureaucracy, this notion that people aren't working very hard. And it's just all been absolutely untrue. I'll tell you, first of all, that my pace and my is three times greater here than it was working at Intel all those years. And I ran a, you know, business that cut across countries and, you know, in a very fast paced environment. One of the big differences is the mission centricity of everybody. I mean, just walking around the NIH campus, the mission of going out and trying to improve the health and well-being of everybody in the country is just part of – it's in the drinking supply, water supply there, right? And then within the PMI cohort program, the palpable excitement that so many people know that, wow, we've never done anything of this scale. We always are complaining about sample sizes not being large enough. We're always wishing we had gotten that data too. And this is our opportunity to remedy a bunch of those, oh, if only we had. That is an incredibly powerful force that has made people be incredibly patient with nights, weekends, and long hours, and incredibly patient with this guy coming in from industry using words that they don't understand. I got to tell you, your acronyms in government and the processes are far more alien to me than I think I am to them at this point. But it's a great honor to do it. I had never imagined it, and I'm sort of kicking myself for having never imagined it. And you know, I just feel like I've been given this incredible gift, and I just want to make the country proud.
Wow, that's great. So I thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule, and I'll underscore that, for coming in today and talking to me. But more importantly, I'd like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Well, I have to say, you know, having been a lucky early prototype of precision medicine whose 23-year cancer journey finally ended when we had the right knowledge and data, I don't want you to have to be an executive from industry or somebody of the means that I have or who speaks English and is well educated. And it can't be something for only the few. It's got to be for everybody. And we're setting up the Precision Medicine Initiative Cohort Program to drive precision health for all. And we're going to make it happen.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with Eric Dishman, director of NIH's Precision Medicine Initiative Cohort Program. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.